This is the listening paper of the National Examination in English 2006. You will hear three different texts and do tasks on all of them. Turn to task 1. Task 1. You are going to hear a talk at a student counselor's office. You are going to hear it twice. Study the form below. You will have 30 seconds to do this. As you listen to the talk, complete the job application form below. An example has been done for you. Hello?
Hi, could I come in?
Certainly, come on in. How can I help you?
Hi, I need some help filling in this application form that I have. I plan to do some volunteer work. I'm looking for a voluntary job.
All right, let's have a look at the form. So I see you filled your name out already.
But I do need some help with the rest of the form.
All right, what job are you applying for?
I'd like to be a voluntary worker at a youth center.
All right, so what is your citizenship?
I've lived in the UK for half a year, but I actually come from the Czech Republic.
All right, the Czech Republic. So are you a Czech?
Well, actually, no. My family comes from Latvia, so I'm Latvian.
All right, you're Latvian. What is your current address?
My address is 12 Park Street in Oxford.
12 Park Street in Oxford. Okay. What is your education? What is your educational background?
I've done a Bachelor's of the Arts in Psychology, and I'm now studying for my MA.
Bachelor of Arts in Psychology, and now studying for an MA. At what university are you studying at?
It's at Charles's University in Prague.
Charles University. What are your foreign language skills?
Well, my English is quite good. I can follow all of the lectures at school, and I interact with people, other foreigners. Mm-hmm. My German's good. I've been an exchange student for 2 years, so I speak that pretty well. And Russian, I can understand some, but I don't really speak it very well.
So your English and your German are fluent, and you have some fluency in Russian, but it is limited.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any other skills?
I'm not very sure. I have been a member of the debate club, so I'm pretty good at it.
Ah, anything else?
I also like step dancing.
Okay, we'll put those down. What is your previous work experience?
I've had some. I helped organize a conference, and I was responsible for promotion, and I was a receptionist at a vet's office.
Then the last question, it says, your availability. When are you ready to start?
I'd be ready in a fortnight.
All right. Wonderful.
Well, thank you so much for all your help.
Oh, you're quite welcome.
Goodbye.
Bye. Listen again and check your answers. Hello?
Hi. Could I come in?
Certainly. Come on in. How can I help you?
Hi, I need some help filling in this application form that I have. I plan to do some volunteer work. I'm looking for a voluntary job.
All right, let's have a look at the form. So I see you filled your name out already.
But I do need some help with the rest of the form.
All right, what job are you applying for?
I'd like to be a voluntary worker at a youth center.
All right, so what is your citizenship?
I've lived in the UK for half a year, but I actually come from the Czech Republic.
All right, the Czech Republic. So are you a Czech?
Well, actually, no. My family comes from Latvia, so I'm Latvian.
All right, you're Latvian. What is your current address?
My address is 12 Park Street in Oxford.
12 Park Street in Oxford. Okay. What is your education? What is your educational background?
I've done a Bachelor's of the Arts in Psychology, and I'm now studying for my MA.
Bachelor of Arts in Psychology, and now studying for an MA. At what university are you studying at?
It's at Charles's University in Prague.
Charles University. What are your foreign language skills?
Well, my English is quite good. I can follow all of the lectures at school, and I interact with people, other foreigners. Mm-hmm. My German's good. I've been an exchange student for 2 years, so I speak that pretty well. And Russian, I can understand some, but I don't really speak it very well.
So your English and your German are fluent, and you have some fluency in Russian, but it is limited.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any other skills?
I'm not very sure. I have been a member of the debate club, so I'm pretty good at it.
Ah, anything else?
I also like step dancing.
Okay, we'll put those down. What is your previous work experience?
I've had some. I helped organize a conference, and I was responsible for promotion, and I was a receptionist at a vet's office.
And the last question, it says, your availability. When are you ready to start?
I'd be ready in a fortnight.
All right. Wonderful.
Well, thank you so much for all your help.
Oh, you're quite welcome.
Goodbye.
Bye. This is the end of Task 1. Turn to Task 2. Task 2. You are going to hear a radio program about young talented musicians. You are going to hear it twice. Read the sentences below. You will have 45 seconds to do this. Listen to the program and complete the sentences. Write no more than 2 or 3 words. An example has been done for you.
The exciting young conductor, soon to take over the Cincinnati Symphony, talks about the internet's role in the classical music world and the relationship between an orchestra and its audiences. Born in 1962 in Tallinn, Estonia, Paavo Järvi is routinely introduced in the context of his extraordinary musical family. In fact, you can scarcely come across a profile of the young conductor that fails to bring up the rest of the Järvi clan, from brother Christian, founder of New York's Absolute Ensemble, and sister Marika, a flutist, to his famous father Neme, who leads the Detroit Symphony. But for all the intention given to the father-son relationship, Paavo evinces a deeply secure sense of his own identity and place within a generation of conductors. He has experienced a musical formation that sets him worlds apart from the often superficial jet-set attitudes of an earlier era. Järvi began as a percussionist. He was in a rock band as a teenager and studied initially at the Tallinn School of Music. He immigrated to the United States in 1979, took American citizenship, and studied at the Curtis Institute. Yet his most formative experiences seem to have been a brief and intense seminar with Leonard Bernstein and his period as principal guest conductor of the City of Birmingham Symphony. It's an apprenticeship to which Järvi often refers. In some ways, it seems even to provide the model for an organic relationship of loyalty and trust between conductor, orchestra, and audience, the sort of relationship whose rediscovery may prove critical to the health of symphony orchestras in the 21st century. So we asked him some questions, and here are his thoughts. Paavo, you're an internet-savvy conductor. In fact, you even have your own website. What are your thoughts about how the internet might affect classical music audiences?
The internet, as far as I can see now, since I'm a very strong believer in live music, is probably going to become most important in its capacity for reaching wider audiences in order to promote classical music, rather than for actually listening to it. One problem with the classical music community is that it needs a central source of information where you can log in and not only have the party line, so to speak, but where you can find out about programs everywhere, who the soloists are, etc. We need a place where you can also have a truly live, constantly updated news service for classical music and a live column about what's going on and where and what happened. That's something that, in classical music especially, travels by word of mouth, but is always a bit distorted.
But how should new audiences be cultivated today?
All the traditional methods that have been used are moderately successful, but they aren't specific enough. For example, obviously it's important to have educational children's concerts. But what is not so effectively done is the cultivation of audiences in their late 20s to 50s. That's a time in your life when you start looking for things that might be more meaningful, when your lifestyle is changing. That generation has been so firmly brought up with an understanding that classical music is somehow for old people, for the wealthy. Changing their minds is almost impossible, so targeting this group of people is the main goal.
Okay, so what is the best way to capture the interest of that group?
We shouldn't be in a war with pop culture because we cannot win. We should be a sophisticated alternative. In fact, we should be the alternative for people who are looking for better things.
And how does that philosophy affect your choice of the kind of repertoire that you'd like to program and record?
I think that's a misconception, because there is nothing wrong with repertoire. It's a question of how it is promoted and marketed. And one thing that the internet can help with, this is what pop music has so successfully done, is to realize that you cannot sell concerts or records unless you really capitalize on a personality or the performer. And therefore, performers have to be treated as personalities, including the orchestra. Like a rock band, it has to be publicized in a way that makes the orchestra attractive and glamorous.
So that was our interview with Paavo Järvi. Thank you so much, Paavo, for being here today.
Oh, you're quite welcome. Thank you. Listen again and check your answers.
The exciting young conductor, soon to take over the Cincinnati Symphony, talks about the internet's role in the classical music world and the relationship between an orchestra and its audiences. Born in 1962 in Tallinn, Estonia, Paavo Järvi is routinely introduced in the context of his extraordinary musical family. In fact, you can scarcely come across a profile of the young conductor that fails to bring up the rest of the Järvi clan, from brother Christian, founder of New York's Absolute Ensemble, and sister Marika, a flutist, to his famous father, Neeme, who leads the Detroit Symphony. But for all the intention given to the father-son relationship, Paavo evinces a deeply secure sense of his own identity and place within a generation of conductors. He has experienced a musical formation that sets him worlds apart from the often superficial jet-set attitudes of an earlier era. Järvi began as a percussionist. He was in a rock band as a teenager and studied initially at the Tallinn School of Music. He immigrated to the United States in 1979, took American citizenship, and studied at the Curtis Institute. Yet his most formative experiences seem to have been a brief and intense seminar with Leonard Bernstein and his period as principal guest conductor of the City of Birmingham Symphony. It's an apprenticeship to which Järvi often refers. In some ways, it seems even to provide the model for an organic relationship of loyalty and trust between conductor, orchestra, and audience, the sort of relationship whose rediscovery may prove critical to the health of symphony orchestras in the 21st century. So we asked him some questions, and here are his thoughts. Paavo, you're an internet-savvy conductor. In fact, you even have your own website. What are your thoughts about how the internet might affect classical music audiences?
The internet, as far as I can see now, since I'm a very strong believer in live music, is probably going to become most important in its capacity for reaching wider audiences in order to promote classical music, rather than for actually listening to it. One problem with the classical music community is that it needs a central source of information where you can log in and not only have the party line, so to speak, but where you can find out about programs everywhere, who the soloists are, etc. We need a place where you can also have a truly live, constantly updated news service for classical music and a live column about what's going on and where and what happened. That's something that, in classical music especially, travels by word of mouth, but is always a bit distorted.
But how should new audiences be cultivated today?
All the traditional methods that have been used are moderately successful, but they aren't specific enough. For example, obviously it's important to have educational children's concerts. But what is not so effectively done is the cultivation of audiences in their late 20s to 50s. That's a time in your life when you start looking for things that might be more meaningful, when your lifestyle is changing. That generation has been so firmly brought up with an understanding that classical music is somehow for old people, for the wealthy. Changing their minds is almost impossible, so targeting this group of people is the main goal.
Okay, so what is the best way to capture the interest of that group?
We shouldn't be in a war with pop culture because we cannot win. We should be a sophisticated alternative. In fact, we should be the alternative for people who are looking for better things.
And how does that philosophy affect your choice of the kind of repertoire that you'd like to program and record?
I think that's a misconception, because there is nothing wrong with repertoire. It's a question of how it is promoted and marketed. And one thing that the internet can help with, this is what pop music has so successfully done, is to realize that you cannot sell concerts or records unless you really capitalize on a personality or the performer. And therefore, performers have to be treated as personalities, including the orchestra. Like a rock band, it has to be publicized in a way that makes the orchestra attractive and glamorous.
So that was our interview with Paavo Järvi. Thank you so much, Paavo, for being here today.
Oh, you're quite welcome. Thank you. This is the end of Task 2. Turn to Task 3. Task 3. You are going to hear a lecture about British traditions. You are going to hear it twice. Study the notes below. You will have 45 seconds to do this. Listen to the lecture and complete the notes below. Write no more than 2 or 3 words. An example has been done for you.
Today's lecture about culture discusses an interesting tradition in Britain, well dressing.
Outside Derbyshire, well dressing is a mystery. Even inside the country, it is a mystery in the Shakespearean sense of a skilled craft practiced only by a privileged few. Its origins are something of a mystery, as is its subsequent history. Pressed for a definition, one might say that well dressing is the art of decorating wells or springs with natural objects to form pictures and designs as a thanksgiving for the gift of water, especially in times of drought. It is not always wells and springs that are decorated. Sometimes it is street taps or standpipes, or places where the wells or taps used to stand. Sometimes it may be just the most eye-catching position in a village. Well dressing almost certainly originated in pagan sacrifices to water gods as a thanksgiving for past supplies and an inducement for further favours. But well dressing today has strong religious links. Probably 3 out of every 4 pictures have a religious theme. A service of blessing the wells is held everywhere. Often the clergy go in procession to each well in turn. A question may occur. Why has well dressing survived almost exclusively in Derbyshire? A glance at a geological map would have shown that nearly all those villages stood on mountain limestone, which is slightly porous. Within 30 minutes of a heavy storm, the soil will be dry, the water having seeped through to the subterranean natural cistern that underlies the limestone. In such an area, springs were vital. If the spring failed, so did the village economy. Life itself was in jeopardy. So why are wells dressed today? Money raising is rarely the main motive for dressing wells. that considerable sums are given to both national and local charities from the collecting boxes perched unobtrusively near most wells. Why, then, do people willingly give up a week each year to do the dressing? Some are born into it. Others find it gives them a new sense of achievement. For people with a creative urge, it offers a chance to achieve aesthetic satisfaction. For newcomers, it offers an entry into village life. Most dressers enjoy the comradeship and the carnival atmosphere, and many are anxious to preserve an ancient custom which is also a genuine folk art. How is well dressing done? No two places assemble their wells in quite the same way, so one can give only a fairly general idea of the process. The first requirement is a strong boarded framework of 5 or 6 units, usually made locally. These heavy screens, about as big as a barn door, are dressed separately and hauled to the wells behind a tractor. Long before that, however, the screens will have been soaked and covered with clay. This clay is puddled with water and salt to uniform plastic consistency, and then applied as a layer from 1/2 to 1 inch thick to all units of the framework. The salt will keep the clay moist to prevent cracking in wind and sun, as well as preserving the freshness of the flowers. The drawing, previously prepared full size on paper, is then applied to the smooth surface of the clay and pricked through with a dressmaker's spiked wheel. The paper is then peeled off, leaving a clear trace of the design on the clay. Then comes the painstaking work of filling in the picture. This is done systematically, starting with long-lasting materials like pieces of bark, mosses and lichens of various colours, useful for foreground and background effects and the shadows. Finally, the real flowering begins, more often now with garden flowers that are said to have better lasting qualities than the wild flowers that used to be favoured. Sometimes, only the petals are used, but elsewhere other parts of the flowers are incorporated. Each petal is put carefully in place and fixed in the clay. Work is done from the bottom upwards, each petal having to overlap the one below so rainwater runs off. Pictures usually stay up for about a week, but are seen to best advantage in the first few days before the sun or wind crack the clay. The days when wells were dressed in secrecy have almost gone, and many villagers now welcome visitors to see work in progress.
Listen again and check your answers.
Today's lecture about culture discusses an interesting tradition in Britain, well dressing.
Outside Derbyshire, well dressing is a mystery. Even inside the country, it is a mystery in the Shakespearean sense of a skilled craft practiced only by a privileged few. Its origins are something of a mystery, as is its subsequent history. Pressed for a definition, one might say that well dressing is the art of decorating wells or springs with natural objects to form pictures and designs as a thanksgiving for the gift of water, especially in times of drought. It is not always wells and springs that are decorated. Sometimes it is street taps or standpipes, or places where the wells or taps used to stand. Sometimes it may be just the most eye-catching position in a village. Well dressing almost certainly originated in pagan sacrifices to water gods as a thanksgiving for past supplies and an inducement for further favours. But well dressing today has strong religious links. Probably 3 out of every 4 pictures have a religious theme. A service of blessing the wells is held everywhere. Often the clergy go in procession to each well in turn. A question may occur. Why has well dressing survived almost exclusively in Derbyshire? A glance at a geological map would have shown that nearly all those villages stood on mountain limestone, which is slightly porous. Within 1/2 hour of a heavy storm, the soil will be dry, the water having seeped through to the subterranean natural cistern that underlies the limestone. In such an area, springs were vital. If the spring failed, so did the village economy. Life itself was in jeopardy. So why are wells dressed today? Money raising is rarely the main motive for dressing wells, though considerable sums are given to both national and local charities from the collecting boxes perched unobtrusively near most wells. Why, then, do people willingly give up a week each year to do the dressing? Some are born into it. Others find it gives them a new sense of achievement. For people with a creative urge, it offers a chance to achieve aesthetic satisfaction. For newcomers, it offers an entry into village life. Most dressers enjoy the comradeship and the carnival atmosphere, and many are anxious to preserve an ancient custom which is also a genuine folk art. How is well dressing done? No two places assemble their wells in quite the same way, so one can give only a fairly general idea of the process. The first requirement is a strong boarded framework of 5 or 6 units, usually made locally. These heavy screens, about as big as a barn door, are dressed separately and hauled to the wells behind a tractor. Long before that, however, the screens will have been soaked and covered with clay. This clay is puddled with water and salt to uniform plastic consistency, and then applied as a layer from 1/2 to 1 inch thick to all units of the framework. The salt will keep the clay moist to prevent cracking in wind and sun, as well as preserving the freshness of the flowers. The drawing, previously prepared full size on paper, is then applied to the smooth surface of the clay and pricked through with a dressmaker's spiked wheel. The paper is then peeled off, leaving a clear trace of the design on the clay. Then comes the painstaking work of filling in the picture. This is done systematically, starting with long-lasting materials like pieces of bark, mosses and lichens of various colours, useful for foreground and background effects and the shadows. Finally, the real flowering begins, more often now with garden flowers that are said to have better lasting qualities than the wild flowers that used to be favoured. Sometimes, only the petals are used, but elsewhere other parts of the flowers are incorporated. Each petal is put carefully in place and fixed in the clay. Work is done from the bottom upwards, each petal having to overlap the one below so rainwater runs off. Pictures usually stay up for about a week, but are seen to best advantage in the first few days before the sun or wind crack the clay. The days when wells were dressed in secrecy have almost gone, and many villagers now welcome visitors to see work in progress.
This is the end of the listening paper. Now turn to the reading paper.